Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alveda. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Welcome, Carlos. Hey, we had a Monday playoff finish in New Orleans yesterday. A first-time winner on the LPGA in Texas. And we have Jack Nicklaus right here on our show tonight, Carlos. Johnny Miller last week, Jack Nicklaus this week. Does it get any better? Let's go.
We're getting big time with Jack Nicklaus. Oh, my God, I can't wait to hear that. Hey, but every week we start with a weekend backspin, and there was some weather delay tournament there at the PGA Tour. Something happened, 54 holes. Fred, tell us all about that.
Well, the Zurich Classic was wet. It was wet in New Orleans, and then it was wetter down there. They were only able to get 54 holes in this week, and they had to finish on Monday morning to do that. It was just, you know, one of those things. Storm fronts set down through there and blew through and just kept raining. Brian Stewart, from just up the road a piece here in Michigan, actually, won his first PGA Tour title at the Zurich Classic. For Stewart, who has been playing in the 125 to 150 category, he's now exempt for 2 years, gets an invite to the Masters, and a whole bunch of other good stuff. He had to survive a three-man playoff, though, when Jamie Lovemark missed a putt on the 18th hole that would have given him the title outright. Benny Ahn fired a superb 65 in the third round to get into the playoff with Stewart and Lovemark. But a bogey on the first extra hole left Stewart and Lovemark to go on alone. Stewart made birdie on the second playoff hole, and Lovemark could not match him. This gave Stewart the win. Newcomer Bobby Wyatt picked up solo fourth, while Jason Day, Chris Kirk, and Johnny Vegas all tied for fifth. Patton Kizzire, your guy, Bryce Mulder, and Harold Varner third rounded out the top ten, while Charlie Hoffman had another good week on tour, finishing T11. Other big names in the event, Ricky Fowler finished T20, and defending champion Justin Rose missed the cut, Carlos.
Oh, my goodness. Jason Day, how did he do, you said?
He finished in T4 with Chris Kirk and Johnny Vegas.
He was there. Hey.
He was there. Yeah, Jason Day and Justin Rose and Ricky Fowler, they were the big names there. Vijay Singh, I think, missed the cut. It was an event for a bunch of the new guys and a bunch of the lower exemption status guys to get into. We got so much big stuff coming, Carlos. This is, mm-hmm. You know, I talked to you about it. I mean, it just feels like a lull in the golf season to me since the Masters has been over. It's just like, okay, it's out there, and yeah, they're playing, but you know, you just can't get excited because you know all this stuff is coming. You know, and for me, it's going to start with the Memorial here in a couple weeks. And it's just going to roll right on through the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, all the way down through, and then we're going to end up with this stupid Olympic thing. But we got a lot of golf coming in the next three or four months.
Come on. The Players Championship is next week, so that should be good.
Well, but that's true. That's right. Yeah, I forgot all about the fifth major. Yeah, that's right.
Hey, but in their European Tour, there was action, too. And Lee Hyo-tong, he fired a superb closing round of 64 to take home the victory in the Volvo China Open. He finished three clear of Chile's Felipe Aguilar at Top Wind Golf and Country Club. Lee began the final round at Top Wind Golf and Country Club, 2 shots behind Felipe Aguilar and Lucas Bergegaard from Denmark. But the Chinese youngster produced a superb error-free fourth round and had caught Aguilar when he reached the 17th. As Lee made yet another birdie, Aguilar's hopes of taking the title were sunk in the water literally. in the 16th. The resulting double bogey left the Chilean three adrift, and Lee and the 20-year-old from Hunan Province was able to par the last to take home the victory in the Mobile China Open. He was keen to give some credit to his caddy, who convinced him to play it safe on that last hole. Aguilar, he held on to second place, finishing one clear of Bernard Gar, as well as England's Richard Bland and Marcel Ciem of Germany, who both of whom closed with fine rounds of 66. Peter Hansen, Scott Henn, and Richie Ramsey were tied for 6th at 17 under, 5 back of Lee, a shot clear of ahead of David Lipsky, Alex Noren, Borja Virto Astudillo, and Fabrizio Zanotti, who made up the top 10. You know, this is a breakthrough win for Lee, whose previous best was 2nd, a playoff loss in the 2015 Shenzhen International. If he should choose to join right now, he will have an exemption on the European Tour until the end of 2018. Lee is the 4th Chinese winner on the European Tour, following Chang Linghui, Liang Wenchang, and Ashun Wu, who won this event last year. With the victory, Fred, Lee now moves from 237 to 131 on the official World Cup rankings.
It's happening, Carlos. The Chinese men are beginning mm-hmm. to enter the international stage. We've been predicting it, and I know, you know, guys are saying, well, it's still 20 years out. No, I'm telling you, within 5 to 10 years, we're going to have a host of Chinese players that are going to come on to the PGA Tour, the European Tour, and be real factors. It's going to happen. Hey, Carlos, moving on to the LPGA, they held the Volunteer of America shootout last week. Jarena Pillar held the 54-hole lead, but a 2-over par on Sunday left her tied for 2nd. Another good week, though. She moves to number 17 in the Rolex ranking, just one spot behind Christy Kerr. She's the number 4 American for the International Crown and Olympic team. 393,000 this season, number 10 on the money list. So that's big for her. She bounces Lynchcombe down even farther, and so... she's looking good for these international team events. Jenny Shin wins with strong final round. She's not missed a cut this year in 10 starts, and she's had 4 top 10s. She is a first-time Rolex winner with her victory. She moves up to number 9 on the 2016 money list with 409,000 and number 24 on the Rolex Women's World Golf Rankings. She has 20 top 10 finishes in 135 starts on the LPGA Tour, so she's been around for a while, and she's earned $2.677 million in her career. But did you see 14-year-old Kara Sanford make the cut? How does that ever happen? I have never seen a 14-year-old kid talented enough to make a cut in a professional event of any kind, and still we see it on the LPGA and the women's golf all the time. I mean, 14-year-old kids are just not mature enough to control their emotions over a 72-hole event with the pressure to make not one. In this case, there were 2 cuts in this event. It's just mind-boggling to me, Carlos. It's the beauty of golf. It's sport. It's just unbelievable. Hey, any kids or parents out there that are listening to the show tonight, here's something new. There's big money in golf. You know, number 1, college scholarships for women go unfilled every year due to a lack of qualified women golfers to fill them. You want to get your daughter a free ride through college? Put a golf club in her hand and take her with you to the next time you go to the golf course or driving range. Number 2, Jarena Pillar hasn't won, but still made over $200,000 in the last 2 weeks. If you add that to what her husband made 2 weeks ago in San Antonio, they deposit over $450,000 to their bank account. Makes their banker very happy, Carlos.
Her banker and her dad and her mother and a lot of other people too around there.
Put a golf club in their hand. Take them to the course.
I'm going to do that with my daughter. Let's see if it works out. She wants to study medicine. She needs some money. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But anyway.
She can study medicine after she makes a couple mil on tour.
Yeah. I bet she won't do it.
That's what Lydia Ko's going to do. She's going to make, you know, she's going to make $15-20 million, and then she's going to retire by age 30.
Do something else. That's a good way to do it. Yeah.
Do something meaningful.
Hey, finally here in the web.com tour, Seamus Power, he became the first Irish golfer to win on the web.com tour in the United States on Sunday night when he took home the $108,000 first prize from the United Leasing and Finance Championship in Indiana. The 29-year-old and three-time former Irish youth champion carded a 5-under-67, the only bogey-free final round at Victoria National Golf Club to finish on 12-under, one clear of a trio of Americans in second place. He birdied the 17th and safe par on the 18th with a 12-foot putt, took the clubhouse lead, and watched as both Canada's Roger Sloan and America's Cody Gribble fell apart over the closing two holes. Sloan was two shots ahead of Power standing on the 17th tee, but found the water on each of the closing holes and recorded two double bogeys in a 3-under-69 that saw him slip back to fifth position on 10-under. That handled Gribble a one-shot lead, but he bogeyed 17 on 18, where he found the water at the back of the green. You know, Power, Fred, now jumps to seventh in the web.com money list with earnings of $131,733. He's just $30,000 short of the mark required to earn a full PGA Tour card last season.
They're getting deep into the web.com. They're starting to add up to see where they're at, you know, those top 25 cards. They're starting to make their move, aren't they? They better be. If they're not within the top 35 now, they need to start playing really well because the summer's going to go really fast on the web.com. You watch, Carlos.
It really does. Well, that will wrap up our weekend backspin. We're going to take our first short break, and when we come back, we're going to have the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. And, Fred, you're going to tee it off, and you're going to be talking about there's still going some more changes there on the Fox broadcasting team. What's going on?
Yeah, Carlos, as you know, one of our favorite topics to cover here on the Par 5 News is the Fox golf broadcast team. You know, they do one thing. They get in the news a lot. you know, with the summer approaching, the U.S. Amateur Men's and Women's Four-Ball Championships will be broadcast May 21st through 25th from Wingfoot and Stream Song, and that will give us the first glimpse of some of the changes Fox has made to their broadcasting crew. You know, Fox used a second string on these events last year, and it was absolutely atrocious. Seemed like a college project rather than a professional broadcast network effort. You know, if you remember, we watched especially like the women there from Bandon Dunes because we wanted to see that, and the coverage was just horrible. This is the second year of the 10-year deal for Fox with the USGA, and as we have documented many times here on the show, Fox is looking for improvement on all fronts. They have completely shaken up their team for the big events, the U.S. Men's and Women's Opens. The play-by-play will once again be handled by Joe Buck and Shane O'Donnell. Buck hopefully will improve from last year, and Shane O'Donoghue, he's a project. If they want somebody with a Scottish accent, they should get a hold of Kieran Clark. He knows a lot more than Shane O'Donoghue ever will know, and besides that, he's a lot better. We need to get Kieran. We need to get him a job there. Call Fox. Let him know. New analyst Paul Azinger should help. Joe Buck on the anchor desk. Azinger was always solid with ABC, and this move to Fox should help them immensely. Mark Brooks, Jay Delsing, Brad Faxon, David Fay, Steve Flesch, Navid Golbus, Gil Hanse, Julie Inkster, Buddy Mariucci, and Scott McCarron will handle hole assignments and offer insight. That is quite an eclectic group there. Some people that you may not, you know about. Buddy Mariucci is a great golf guy, long-time golf coach down in Florida, real knowledgeable. Steve Flesh did a pretty good job last year on the telecast, so he's a holdover. Brad Faxon was one of the only believable guys from last year. I don't know about Mark Brooks. You know, Jay Delsing, we'll see about that. On-course reporters, two-time U.S. Open champ and Hall of Famer Curtis Strange will join Ken Brown as on-course announcers. This will be a new role for Strange, and it should be interesting to see how he adapts to this situation. Holly Saunders, you remember her, once of Golf Channel fame, will handle studio host duties, but she was like the missing woman last year. She was MIA completely. Wonder if she'll get a little bit more airtime this year. Maybe they'll give her something really to talk about. Golf writers Shane Bacon and Jaime Diaz are also on the team, and they're going to handle interviews. In addition, Oakmont Director of Golf Bob Ford will provide special insights on the course for U.S. Open broadcasts from the historic venue. Ford has been the head professional at Oakmont since 1979. That's 37 years if you're counting. Plus, his winter gig is at Seminole in Jupiter Beach, Florida. Not a bad little job there. Little tease here. I talked with Bob Ford last week, and he has agreed to do an interview ahead of the U.S. Open to give our listeners insight on the iconic course heading into the Open. Perhaps the most notable thing to mention on the full Fox lineup outside of the Azinger-Norman switch is the absence of Fox NFL Sunday host Kurt Menefee, who served as the network studio host for the U.S. Open, and analyst Tom Weisskopf. Carlos, in all sincerity, we are rooting for vast improvement from the Fox team this year. It appears they have gotten better with the on-air talent. My question is, have they improved the production and camera work also? Be assured, we're going to be watching and rating, and we'll tell you all about it.
I just hope that Mike Tirico could be there at some point now that they have hired him. I don't know if they are going to use him, but hey, just a hint. Mike Tirico is available, and you have him on the roster now. We'll see. And like you said, we'll be all over it. But hey, so let's talk about this. If you didn't see it, golf fans should look up the article on golf.com by Mike Bamberger. He wrote it last week, and it's titled, Super Agent Mark Steinberg Brings Money In, Gives Distractions Out. Hey, you know, the duo of Mark Steinberg and Tiger Woods has made no secret of their close personal relationship that they enjoy. This is a relationship so strong that when Woods was involved in that messy marriage breakdown back in November 2009, Steinberg, he protected his clients from a barrage of frenzy from the media. In return, when Steinberg partnered the company with IMG in May 2011, Woods was the first sporting figure and far away the most important to sign up on him. A veteran of many tough negotiations, he was the architect of Woods' new mega deal with Nike when he returned to form in 2013. He since has signed up Matt Kuchar and Justin Rose, two of the golf's gentlemen, and more recently Justin Thomas, who was coveted by everybody. He cites Mike Bamberger, he cites Kuchar as saying that his wife was apprehensive at first due to Steinberg's take-no-prisoners reputation, but that he eventually won her over. He also reveals that Steinberg's press tent nickname is Dr. No, earned routinely by telling reporters, no. Really? Fred, have you ever heard Steinberg say that word? I mean, no, okay.
No, Carlos, when I send him an email or ask him a question, he doesn't reply to me, so I don't even get a no.
don't mention how many times he has said it. We don't have that response. But he also, you know, Bamberger also points out that people in the golf business, they do recognize and tell you that Tiger's tiny. He's effective at his job, he's relentless, he's hardworking, and he has become, by virtue of that relationship with Woods, one of the most powerful people in the game. He's politically skillful, and he should be, if he is to manage all his personality and get them all the money in the deals they've gotten. I mean, but like Bamberger says, he also has been a master at keeping distractions away from his clients, and there's no better example than what he's done with Tiger Woods. for all the things we hear and all the people trying to get things out of his camp, there's one constant, and that is Steinberg coming out and handling the situation any way he does it, good or bad, but he does it anyway. You know, it's a long, interesting article. Go read it, and you have to read between the lines a little, but Bamberger covers there a lot of interesting ground about Woods and being a super agent by Mark Steinberg. And, hey, talking about Tiger Woods, we reported last week that we may be getting closer to see Tiger back on the PGA Tour. Well, he officially registered, as you might remember, for the U.S. Open at Oakland last week. And now it's been reportedly informed that he has made accommodation plans for the Memorial Tournament in Ohio, Fred, suggesting that, you know, the Jack Nicklaus-hosted event could mark his return from back surgery. Although Woods has made no commitment to the Memorial and his plans remain fluid as he rehabilitates his body, it makes sense that he would want to compete at least in one tournament before the U.S. Open, especially this one, which he has won five times. He can play with one extra those anyway. But Woods is believed to have also made proactive accommodations plans for next week's Players' Championship Florida, although I think that might be a little too soon for his return. And Fred, since we talked about Steinberg, as is his tradition, he did not immediately respond to confirmation of his client's memorial accommodation.
When I was down at Kiwa Island, they tell the story that when Tiger came in there for the 2012 PGA Championship that Rory McIlroy won, Tiger brought his boat down there and parked it, you know, the 200-footer. But he also rented a house, okay, out near the golf course. And some of those houses out there are pretty good size, Carlos, I want to tell you. They're in the, you know, several million-dollar range. And so Tiger contacted the people then and said, hey, would you mind if I took your furniture out and put my furniture in? And you know, he paid him an extra fee to do that, okay? So he trucked all this furniture in, okay? Then when he just left the furniture there. So can you imagine what he spent for that week? You know, just running the boat down there would, you know, be more than we could afford, you know, that, you know, there's no way. And then to go, yeah, these guys, they spend so much money. They make so much money. They do so much stuff. It's unbelievable. Hey, Carlos, the Olympics, my favorite topic, the Olympics. There's going to be Olympics this year, Carlos. Did you know that? I didn't know. Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. I know you like it down there. And maybe it's wonderful. I've always kind of wanted to go myself, to be quite honest with you, but I don't think golf needs to be in the Olympics. But nonetheless, Ian Baker Finch completely understands why guys are pulling out of the Olympics and says it needs to be a team format. Carlos, we've been reporting the players that are opting out of the Rio Olympics coming up in August. The Zika virus seems to have some players concerned, as well as the compressed schedule at the end of the year with the majors, FedEx Cup, Ryder Cup, and then add to that the Olympics in such a short period of time. Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, Charles Schwartzel, and Vijay Singh have already announced their withdrawal, and more are likely forthcoming. Ian Baker Finch said last week that he completely understands the decisions, and the IOC needs to adopt a team format rather than the individual stroke play format that will be used in Rio. Baker Finch said, I don't think people realize that Adam is not letting anyone down. It's his decision, and he's entitled to make it. I'm disappointed he won't be with us, but I totally understand his position. Baker Finch has passed on his thoughts to the International Golf Federation, while Gary Player and others fear the pullouts will affect the vote to keep the sport in the games past 2020, Baker Finch hopes it will just make them heed format changes. I think it will make them think about making a team competition. I'd even love to see it as a mixed team event. That would be awesome. Oh, the pro men, they'd love that. But yeah, go to the Olympics and then play a mixed team event. Oh, they'd be all about that. Yeah, I can see that happening. Good news, Paul McGinley has reported that at least one big name will be in Rio. Rory McIlroy has committed to the team. And the IOC, And the golf's going to be in the Olympics in 2020 and on, ongoing, I'm going to guarantee. I'll tell you right now it's going to be in, Carlos. And here's the reason. The IOC is very happy that's being reported that the ad revenue for the Olympics is up 10% due to the addition of golf to the Rio Games. Host network NBC has hit the $1 billion mark with 4 months to go for potential advertisers to commit to sports for the Olympics. Carlos, never forget one thing. One important thing about golf. Golfers buy Cadillacs. Golfers buy Beamers, Audis, as well as Omega and Rolex watches. Those kind of people like to spend money on advertising. So golf's going to be in the Olympics, Carlos.
I truly hope it is. I truly hope, because I just want these guys like Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen. You see the guys that are pulling out? They're the old guys, my old guys. They're the ones pulling out. All the young guys want to be there. Mediaco wants to be there. Jordan Spieth said he will miss it by anything in the world. Rory McIlroy is there. Ricky Fowler wants to go there. Jason Day will not miss it by any way in the world. So, you know, it's the old guys that are just like, okay, I don't know. I've already been traditionally about the Masters and all that. But there is no bigger stage in the world in sports than the Olympics. Okay? Patrick Reed said, any chance to represent the Stars and Stripes, just let me know when and where. I'll be there. That's the attitude, okay? That's the attitude you want, okay? That's the attitude.
Okay.
That's the Olympics.
Okay.
I don't know, because team format.
It's screwing up my golf season, Carlos.
No, it's not. Team format, no way. You play individually. It's like tennis. You don't go there and play teams. Come on, man. This is something that is just going to be, because it's the first time in such a long time. Everybody has been educated about the four majors and all that. This is going to grow on people. And, you know, it's the Olympics, man. It's the Olympics. There's no way. There's nothing bigger than that. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see. Anyway. Yeah, I just have to say it.
But how do you really feel about it?
I'll tell you someday. I'll let you know. about it. Anyway, you know, the USGA held media day for the 2016 U.S. Open on last week, where they announced that they intend to have a 300-yard par 3. The last time the U.S. Open was played at Oakmont Country Club in 2007, its 8-hole made history as the first par 3 to be played from 300 yards during the final round. Now, this year, the same hole and will once again try to get players to pull out 3 woods and drivers on the par 3. While the hole is expected to be played from 288 yards for the majority of the tournament, USGA Executive Director Mike Davis hinted at U.S. Open Media Day that the tee marker may be moved back for a day to honor the way the hole was originally designed. Davis said, and I quote, "As we said in 2007, before everybody thinks we have lost our marbles making a par 3 300 yards, when you go back and you read historically about what course designers HC and WC Founds wanted, they designed that hole to be a driver 3-wood hole. The only way to get it to that way nowadays is to get something back there." End of quote. So let's get this straight. I mean, technically, the 8 holes back tee will measure to 288 yards, same as in 2007, but also one day only, in an effort to hold true to Fowler's desire that players hit 3-wood and even driver on the downhill hole with the large green that can withstand today's poor tour pros and their power game. That's what's going to happen. Well, I think that the only thing that could change Davis' mind on this front is if the area gets an abundance of rain, in which case he'll think twice about stretching back the tees. But the 8th hole was the 5th toughest hole on the course 9 years ago, with the green being reached in regulation on just 26.7% of the attempts. This course is one of the most difficult courses, although it's not long, it's very narrow. And that change must have players already delighted. I am sure about that. I'm already giddy about the U.S. Open this year. I mean, in 2007, Angel Cabrera won Oakmont with a 5 over 285. Fred, it might be even worse this year.
It's a tough golf course, and like I say, I can't wait to have Mr. Ford come on the show and tell us all about it. There's so many nuances there, and he's been around the golf course for so long. He knows every inch of the property, so it should be very interesting when we get to talk to him. Carlos, the second annual National Golf Day is May 18th. Golfers will descend on our nation's capital to enlighten our legislatures on the benefits of golf to the country. We're going to discuss this in more detail in our practice range segment, but golf is responsible for over $4 billion being generated for charity in this country last year. It takes a lot of local outings and benefits to raise that kind of money. Golf is a $70 billion industry in the United States, and there are 2 million Americans whose livelihoods depend on golf. Greenskeepers, caddies, PGA professionals, directors of golf. Golf is a huge industry. 20 million golfers are paying green fees, buying beer, sandwiches, golf clubs, tees, clubs, everything else that a golfer needs to go out and bat a ball around. Golf also has some fitness benefits if you don't just sit in the cart and drinking beer all the time. If you get out and walk and enjoy the fresh air and become one with nature, you're going to enjoy it a little bit more. Carlos, all of these numbers trickle down to the local economies, in even our smallest towns and villages. The local golf course is an economic center, but it's also a place for social gathering, and many courses have facilities to host weddings, reunions, corporate events, and every other sort of gathering that you can imagine. This, of course, has a big effect on local economies, social interaction, and business. The benefits of golf are varied and plentiful. That's the message the organizers of the National Golf Day are trying to convey each year, and we get it, Carlos. That wraps up the Par 5 News, presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products with popular name brands, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories, are available with discount coupons for huge savings. They not only have an excellent product line, they offer every golf nut the chance to earn money while doing it. They can set up their own pro shop. United Golf Network, check it out. Visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com today. Check out the products, discounts, and their opportunity, Carlos.
And with that, we'll wrap up Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have our VIG, very important guest of the week, the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the VIG, very important guest of the week. It's none other than the golf most winningest major champion, and that's the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus, maybe the all-time great. He will be talking to us about his course design business and philanthropy efforts. So, Fred, if you want to talk to us a little bit about this interview.
Yeah, we had the opportunity to talk with Mr. Nicklaus, and in this interview he talks about the charitable work of the Nicklaus Foundation, his golf course design business, which is really picking up this year, and his views on changing the golf ball. If you remember at the Masters, you know, he did the press conference and said, you know, just change the frickin' ball. And so we had a little bit of fun with that. So really good interview. Carlos, go ahead and roll that if you would, please.
That's great.
Talking with Jack Nicklaus here at the Legends Luncheon in Columbus, Ohio. And Jack, this is quite an event. You raised $1.1 million today. That's up a little bit from last year. I know you give Barbara a lot of credit for the foundation work you're doing with the hospitals here in Columbus and in Florida, but this is really a good deal.
It's nice. We started it. We were down to a fundraiser for MD Anderson about 7 years ago down in Houston, and Jim Nance and I did a conversation. They raised a little over $1 million, or I guess a little under $1 million that time. Barbara said, you know, I think this maybe would work well in Columbus for Memorial Tournament and Nationwide Children's Hospital. So we put it in, and we started out. We raised about $250 the first year, and we said, if we could do a little better than that, we kept working on it. And, you know, I can't see it. I work hard on it because I'm not up here, but we certainly are behind whatever's going on. And they're up to $1.1 million this year. I think that's pretty neat.
I believe that brings it up to $4 million for 6 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the golf course business. You've been very involved for many years with golf course design. Talked to you last year here, and you said things were a little slow in the U.S., but talking to you this year, you think things have picked up considerably.
Yeah, we've got probably half a dozen new jobs in the United States this year, and I'm just amazed at seeing how just all in the last 3 or 4 months it's just exploded. I think that's kind of nice. I'm getting tired of traveling 10,000 miles to do a golf course. I'd much rather, you know, travel a couple hundred.
I got to ask you real quick. So you and Barbara, and you need a little more room for the grandkids. So you took a lease out on the second largest house in the U.S., the mansion in New York. What's the story with that?
Well, you know, nothing's happened with that yet. It's going through contract stages and approvals of memberships and so forth with a deal. It's up on Long Island. Ahika Castle is a project that a fellow named Stan Gale, who we did Songda, where they had the President's Cup over in Korea. He did that, and he wants to do it, and we kind of put it together to where we would redo the golf course and refurbish the castle, and it could be a very special project.
You've done a couple partnerships in the past. You've got the one going at with Gary Player, Lee Trevino, Arnold Palmer, and you've also worked with Tom Doak at Sabonic on Long Island. Is there any other partnership deals going on, or how do those work for you?
I hope not.
Much easier work by yourself.
I much prefer to control the job. We're basically doing the job at the Greenbrier with the support of the other guys, and you know we're the lead people doing it because we really have the organization to do it. The other golf courses that we're doing are all golf courses that we're doing within our organization.
It always amazes me when I walk into a place. I got a chance to play the Ocean Course a couple weeks ago, and you walk on some of these places. I mean, that was a swamp. How do you guys walk onto a place and visualize a golf course? What is the first thing you look at when you see a property?
Depends on what the property is and what I'm trying to find. I mean, it could be anything. It could be the terrain. It could be the vegetation. It could be how much water's on it. You just got to find out what's there before you decide what you do, and then use a little imagination and creativity and try to work environmentally with the property and do it properly and see what you come up with. But I mean, that's, you know, if it was something that it was just a cookie cutter to look at, it wouldn't need us. Somebody else could do it.
Let's take Muirfield Village out of the equation here for a second. Of all the other courses, when you got done with the project, said, "Boy, this is really pretty good. I'm really proud. I'm really happy with this one."
Well, I got a lot of them. You know, it's like, you know, which is your favorite? It's, you know, like, who's your favorite child? As an organization, we've done about 400 golf courses, but you know, I'm proud of all of them. And there's a lot of the golf courses that I've done you'll never hear of, but my definition of a good golf course is one that is built to serve the purposes of its owner to accomplish what he's trying to accomplish, he or she, whether it's a membership or whether it's a hotel or whether it's a resort or whether it's a private club or a public course, whatever it is. If it serves that purpose and is financially successful, then you've done a good golf course.
Change the subject on you just real quick. You've always been a proponent of maybe limiting the golf ball for the tour players a little bit to make some of the older courses maybe relevant again. You even made the statement, I think, at the Masters here, change the freaking ball. The Masters is looking at doing some changing again, maybe lengthening their course, but it turns out the shortest hole in the golf course made the biggest impact on the tournament last year, with Spieth making the 7 at the 150-yard par 3. Do they need to lengthen that course? Do they need to constantly change it?
Well, I don't know whether anybody does. I said change the freaking ball. That's what I've said. I mean, the golf ball is the biggest problem we've got, I mean, particularly for tournament golf. There's only one golf course in the United States that's not obsolete to the golfers today with the golf ball, and that's Augusta because they're the only ones that had enough money to keep up with it. So, you know, why do you want to keep having to change your golf course constantly because it can't meet the standards? Well, it's easy to meet the standards. We have 15,000 courses now in the United States. I think we've had a little reduction. You know, the golf ball is the determining factor of whether that course can become a championship course. I was with the USGA the other night, and they're thinking about it doesn't make any difference how much acreage somebody has for a golf course. You can build a golf course on it. Then you just design a ball that fits the acreage. And I think that's a far more sensible approach than trying to fit a piece of ground to a golf ball.
You just spent this week, you spent a day or so down at Bradenton at the Concession Club for the Concession Cup. What are your thoughts, feelings about that new tournament that's coming on for the amateurs?
Well, it's an extension of the Walker Cup. It's for not the best amateurs. As they say, they call it for the best amateurs who never turn pro. That really is basically mid-amateurs and senior amateurs going together from the United States and then against Great Britain and Ireland. And it's a nice event and a fun event to go to. You'll have some good matches. There'll be some great competition, some great camaraderie, and it'll further the game of golf, and particularly amateur golf.
Jack, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk to us.
My pleasure.
There you have it, Fred. Change the damn ball. Change it. Freaking ball. Change it. What's going on there? But anyway, it's great to hear Jack talking about all his golf business and also about the philanthropy, which we're going to talk right now a little bit about it in our practice range. We're going to be talking about philanthropy in golf. Is that a true heartfelt thing or is it a lip service? We're going to talk a little bit about that. But before that, I want you to give any final thoughts on Jack's interview before we move to that.
Yeah, it's such a pleasure, such an honor to get to talk to him, Carlos. I mean, as you know, Jack, you know, is a real idol for me. I got to see him for the first time in 1970 live, and he hit a shot from behind some trees that completely blew me away, and, of course, followed his career all the way up through. Of course, going to Ohio State, you know, and Jack had been there and Weisskopf. And so to get to now to be able to talk to him and do these interviews, and even before I did the interview, Carlos, we stood over to the side and talked for, 7 or 8 minutes while the scrum was centered around Johnny Miller. And we were just talking about different things. And it's such a delight to be able to do that. And Jack is, you know, he's been there, done that. He knows he's at the top of the golf world. The USGA talks to him. The PGA Tour talks to him. The RNA talks. Everybody talks to him to get his feeling on stuff because he understands all aspects of the game. He's been a top amateur. He's been a top professional. He's been a top golf course designer. So he knows the game inside and out. And to be able to have someone of his caliber on our show and talk to him about these things, and we're going to talk about the philanthropy in a minute. I'm not even going to talk about that. I'm going to bring it up here in a minute again. But he has just done such wonderful things, and it's all become possible because of his relationship with golf, Carlos.
And it's great. I mean, it's awesome just to have the Golden Bear here. I'm really excited about it. Hopefully we can get him back some other time. But right now, let's talk a little bit about the practice range where every week you and I pick a topic and start to take our shots at it. So I'm going to go right away and tell you, hey, what's your take on philanthropy in golf? Do you think that's a heartfelt thing? Is it a lip service? How is it going to you right now, the philanthropy in golf?
Well, you know, the PGA Tour started this thing a couple of years ago, you know, when they were getting ready to hit $1 billion in charitable donations over the years. And you know what? It's wonderful. I don't mean to demean it in any way, shape, or form. Golf completely surpasses any other sport, professional sport, major sport, whatever. I don't care what you want to talk about. Golf gives back. They make a difference. I go back to the old Danny Thomas Classic, and, you know, he gave money to the Children's Hospital there in Memphis and made it one of the, you know, one of the all-time great hospitals for children in the nation. And so other areas have picked up that cause. The Children's Hospital in Columbus, excuse me, sorry. The Children's Hospital in Columbus, when I went to school there back in the 60s, it was a major hospital back then, but not like it is today. I mean, it's world-renowned. It's one of the best. And Nicholas's have been some of the people that have helped grow that through the Memorial Tournament and their association with Nationwide. Then they're doing the same thing down in southern Florida, in Miami, with the Nicholas Foundation there, their association with the Honda Classic, and they're donating. They made a $60 million commitment to the hospital down there over the next 6 or 7 years or something like that. So what they're doing is just phenomenal. It's heartfelt. When you see Barbara Nicholas and Jack Nicholas at this Legends Lunch that I was to down there a couple weeks ago, and they're interacting with these kids who've had life-threatening issues. They've had leukemia, or they've had heart problems, or whatever. And they're talking to these kids. They're talking to their families. It's just a wonderful thing. They're 100% in. They're involved. They're committed. Barbara has taken this thing and run with it, and Jack has supported her with every ounce of energy that he can. And he's there, and he does a great job. It's just not like, okay, well, this is Barbara's thing, I'm going to stand in the back. No. He's there. He's doing the work also and helping her get to where she wants to go. The next time, I chide myself, Carlos, for not Barbara was right there. As a matter of fact, I was talking to her. I should turn the microphone on and talk to her. Next time, I will get an interview with Barbara for the show, and we'll talk to her. But no, the Nicholases do a fantastic job. And there are other golfers, there are other people that also do that in a way that's wonderful. Now, let's go back to the tournaments. First of all, the tournaments could not run. They just could not operate the way they operate without volunteers. Where do you get the number of volunteers? To put on the President's Cup, when they had it down here in Columbus a couple of years ago, I think they went through like 2,400 volunteers. To put on just the little marathon classic here in town, they need over 1,000. So they can't afford to pay these people. So what do they do? Okay, we'll give the money. We'll give so much money to charity. So they take all the money that comes in through ticket sales, through sponsorships, and all the other things that they get. They pay the salaries of the people that run the tournament and work there year-round, selling the ads and doing everything that needs to be done, getting the players to come in. They subtract it off, and pretty much the rest of the money goes to charities. And here in Toledo, I know over 30 charities every year benefit. And Judd Silverman, the tournament director here of the Marathon Classic, wants to raise $800,000 this year to get over the $2 million mark. So, you know, it's been around now for 41 years, something like that? 41 years. So, you know, that's big money here in Toledo, okay? It's wonderful. So now the PGA Tour is approaching $2 billion in charitable giving. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. The tournaments are a big economic boom to the local economies. And then on top of that, they give a lot of donations, a lot of charitable giving back to the organizations in the community that really need it. So that's all well and good. Then the next thing, the next part of this to me, Carlos, is that as soon as you see a young guy win on tour today, some financial advisor right there, and they're saying, okay, we got to put this money into a charitable trust, into a foundation. And so how much of that money really actually goes back out to charitable giving? I don't know. I think a lot of that becomes a tax shelter. The guys can pay themselves a salary out of that. It becomes like a retirement plan for them, like an annuity, basically. That money's sitting over there. They can take the interest off. They can live on it. They make themselves whatever they want to do, take a trip to the Bahamas, buy a place in Albany with Tiger, whatever. But that's a little different deal. If 10% or 20% of that money goes to charity, well, that's 10% or 20% that somebody else wouldn't be paying or may never have gone, so it's a good thing, okay? But those kind of things are not what maybe in the spirit of what some of the other things or some of the other people have been doing. But all in all, Carlos, and I'll wrap this up because I know you've got some things you want to talk about, but all in all, golf, and what I haven't even talked about the local stuff. I'll talk about that later, you know, like the local golf outings for somebody that has a bad car wreck or a hospital bill they can't pay or whatever. And all this totals up to $4 billion a year, Carlos, that golf gives back to charity through a stupid sport. It's just, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal to me. There's many aspects to it, but I'm amazed by it, quite honestly. Nobody ever really talks about it that much, so that's kind of one of the reasons I want to talk about it a little bit. And then, especially when I see what the Nicklauses have done, the impact they have made. Palmer has done the same thing also with the Winnie Palmer Hospital for Women and Children down in the Orlando area and the Palmer Hospitals down there. They've just done a wonderful thing. So it's good stuff, Carlos, and it doesn't get a lot of airtime. So I'm kind of glad we talked about it a little bit tonight.
Oh, me too. And let me tell you, I do agree with you. It's incredible what golf does and all that it gives back, especially from the tournament's points. And like you mentioned, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer. And the point of the player is, I get it. It's the same thing that I would say. You know, some of them, they might view it as, okay, this is my way to get some tax avoided or something like that. But there are some players that do have some foundations that they really are – that have hit home, and they really take good care of it and spend some time, because you have to spend time on those things to really make them work. Another point of view that we have to talk about when we talk about this is charity tournaments that are filling up the clubs right now. I'm going to give you an example. Last year of the Jones Center Golf Classic at the Stanwish Club, which is a private club in Greenwich, in Connecticut, it had 25 foursomes. Each of them paid at least $10,000 to enter the tournament. That event raised $325,000 for veterans' health care. You know, charity golf tournaments like that one have become right now a part of the season for affluent golfers and the wealthy trustees who organize and help underwrite them for the nonprofits they support. With that proliferation of those charity events, which the National Golf Foundation last year made a survey and counted about 143,000 of them, not only there's big money at stake, they say $3.9 billion were raised through those events, but increasingly golf tournaments are a way to bring new donors to an organization and market its message after the day is over. Steve Mona, which we had in the show a couple of times, he's the chief executive of the World Golf Foundation, and he commissioned the survey. He said, and I quote, "Charity golf tournaments are very important for the charities themselves. Among the charities they surveyed, they said to us that 60% said the tournaments they run were extremely or very important to their success," end of quote. You know, and golfers as a whole are affluent and older, and which makes them an attractive group for nonprofits soliciting donations. And for the nonprofits, the lure of a day of golf with friends or business contacts at an ice course they couldn't play otherwise is driving donations and awareness about those organizations, which is always great. Even those not typically associated with sporting events are getting recognized and are getting their stake as well. Now there's another side, you know, and he has to get something here from us. I mean, I'm going to talk about Donald Trump and something that recently came to him because, you know, he has boasted that he has given $102 million to to charity in the last 5 years. That sounds great, right? Who would be rich and men giving away all that money, right? Except for one thing. None of that $102 million was a gift of his own cash. That's right. Trump gave $102 million to charity without donating any of his own money. You know, the Washington Post, I was reading, they dug into the 93 pages of charitable contributions he has made over the past 5 years. And maybe he didn't think anybody would dig too deep. But they did, and it reveals that for all of his boasting wealth, he's not a very charitable guy. You know why? Because what he's doing, apparently, is just giving cash, not giving cash, but land conservation agreements, rounds of golf, and you know, all those kind of things that are, yeah, he can tangible them as $102 million, but it's really not cash. But to me, hey, at least he's giving something to the charities to use, you know, but at least it's something. But, you know, this is being brought to the attention, and that's one of the things that then you say, is it heartfelt or is it lip service? So I'll leave it like that, Fred. What do you think?
Yeah, everybody has a different angle, a different slant, you know, but like I was saying, you know, with the guys that set up the foundations, any dollar that goes to charity, and just like Trump, I mean, I do this myself, Carlos, somebody, you know, you get hit up for this charity or that charity or do this or do that, you know, I donate golf lessons, you know, I'll give them a certificate for one or two or three golf lessons, whatever the case may be. You know, I'm happy to do those, you know, no problem doing it all. It's not cash in my pocket, but, you know, somebody is going to get a, you know, a hundred and some dollar benefit out of that. So it's worth something, and the charity is going to sell that at an auction or whatever and turn that into cash. So, you know, it's a good deal. I don't behoove. I'm not going to – anybody that donates or gives something, that's fantastic because they don't have to do it. It's their money. They can do what they want to do with it. If they sleep good at night, you know, that's great. So it just blows me away, Carlos. And let me cover one more point. Two things here I didn't mention earlier. But number one, local golf courses here in our area, you know, little golf courses, little country golf courses, they – outings, charitable outings are the lifeblood for these places, okay? You know, it gives them a chance to get 100, 150 golfers in there for a day. They're getting all those green fees. They're getting all those cart fees. They're selling beer. They're selling pop. They're selling sandwiches. They're selling a meal. You know, they just couldn't live. They couldn't survive without these things. So, you know, yes, the charity's making money on top of it, but it really helps the golf course, which helps the local community because there's people that work there that pay taxes and live in the community and spend money at the stores. So it's a good deal on that level also. Not even to mention the person or the family that really needed the money from the donation that they're going to make, you know, that's fantastic for them. So, you know, it's unbelievable. And as I mentioned earlier, $4 billion a year, Carlos. $4 billion. That's a staggering number to me.
It is. And I mean, whatever it can be given. That's why I ended up saying, hey, I don't mind if Trump is not giving cash. He's giving something, and the charities are benefiting from it. So if you can do the same thing like you're doing right now, and anybody out there can do it, help out. We have to give back. So with that, we'll wrap up our practice range. We're going to take our last short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our final pot.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for final thoughts. I'm going to start right away telling you about Tommy Gainey. He's also known as Two Gloves. He had a good run at the RBC Heritage, but it ended up early when he withdrew from South Carolina's only PGA Tour event in Hilton Head after 11 holes in the second round. The Bishop South Carolina native was 4-under through 10 holes, 2 shots off the lead, then he carded an 8 on number 11. Ganey addressed the situation on Facebook and Twitter Friday afternoon and explained that it was due to a back injury and plans to miss the rest of the 2016 season. Ganey was playing at Harbour Town on a sponsor's exemption. The big Gamecock fan has played most of the 2016 season on the Web.com Tour, so we wish him a full recovery and come back sooner than expected. Two gloves, come on, let's go, let's do it for 2017. And finally, hey, John Daly turned 50 last Thursday and said that Fossey Seller owes him $150,000. Wow, this is because of a bet that allegedly took place years ago at Augusta National the week of the Masters during the par 3 tournament. According to Daly, Fossey said, "I got $150,000, you're never going to make it to 50." But after recalling that story, Daly said he and Seller never shoot on the bet. You know, Daly said, and I quote, "So I won't hold him up to it. I'll just have him give me a free bottle of his vodka. That's about it. Isn't Big John smart?" As for the for what Daly hitting the big 5-0 means for the Champions Tour, well, Fred, they have been in need of a big name, and Big John could be just the guy for the job if he can stay sober and show up to play. That is another big if in his case.
That's a big if. You got that right. We'll see. We'll see how Big John gets along. Wish him all the best. You know, we'll see. Hey, Carlos, WADA released a report that had 6 international golfers on the list for drug issues. Golfers from France, Italy, South Korea, and South Africa were sanctioned for unspecified violations of World Anti-Doping Code, of which the IGF, the organization recognized by the International Olympic Committee as the official world governing body for golf, is a signatory. Italy was the biggest offender with 3 golfers sanctioned, 2 of whom tested positive for a prohibited substance, and a 3rd who was caught through non-analytical means. Of 507 samples analyzed, WADA identified 8 adverse analytical findings, and only one of those athletes was determined to have a valid therapeutic use exemption. So the PGA Tour, should be noted, does not fall under these past WADA mandate. So none of these samples originated from tour-administered tests. However, on Friday, this Friday, May the 6th, is 13 weeks before the start of the Rio Olympics, and potential competitors will be subject to more stringent drug testing protocols than the ones adopted by the PGA Tour in 2008. That's the reason we bring this up, Carlos, because starting Friday, they're going to start following the guys around into the restroom with their little cups. Well, I bet they're going to love that. Hey, U.S. Open's coming up. We're just a hair over a month away from that. Pretty excited about it. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. The United States Golf Association has accepted a total of 9,877 entries for the 2016 U.S. Open at Oakmont. Is your name in there, Carlos? Did you get signed up? The number of entries is 3rd to the record of 10,127 for 2014 at Pinehurst. So, they've accepted entries from all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and 72 foreign countries. The number of entries received underlines the global appeal of the U.S. Open Championship and the historical greatness of Oakmont Country Club. So, Carlos, we got the Open coming up. There's only 11 guys that are totally exempt in the field. You want to know who those are?
Yeah.
You've got Jordan Spieth. Of course, you remember him. I think he won out there in Chambers Bay last year. You got Angel Cabrera, because he won in 2007, so he still got another year of exemption. Ernie Els, Jim Furyk, Lucas Glover, Martin Kaymer, Graham McDowell, Rory McIlroy, Jeff Ogilvie, Justin Rose, Webb Simpson, and Tiger Woods that still hold exemptions into the U.S. Open. Sectional qualifying, played over 36 holes, conducted on Monday, May 23rd in Japan, Monday, May 30th in England, and Monday, June 6th at 10 sites in the United States, ranging from New Jersey to California. And they'll be playing at one or two places in Columbus. That's the Monday after the Memorial, Carlos.
Well, back Niners, that will wrap up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VAG, very important guest of the week, the Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.